Today is Tuesday, May 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The World Health Organization warns that nations need to stay vigilant.
Just because the disease is on the way down now, that it's going to keep going down, and then we're going to get a number of months to get ready for a second wave. We may get a second peak in this wave.
Plus, Hong Kong's chief executive tries to quell concerns.
Hong Kong's freedoms will be preserved.
And a pair of NASA astronauts prepare to blast off. We'll have those stories and more next. By the end of this week, New Zealand will have some of the world's most relaxed COVID-19 controls. Gatherings of up to 100 people will be permitted beginning Friday, up from the previous limit of only 10. New Zealand has about 1,500 reported or probable coronavirus infections, and 21 people have died. Phil Mercer starts us off.
In March, New Zealand imposed some of the world's toughest COVID-19 lockdown measures. At the time, the South Pacific nation of 5 million people had recorded just over 100 confirmed cases of the disease. Many of the restrictions on freedom of movement and business have been wound back, and New Zealand has been able to avoid a second wave of infection so far. Health officials have advised the government that larger gatherings of up to 100 people should be safe if distancing and hygiene protocols are followed. Beginning Friday, larger church services would be allowed to resume, while cafes and restaurants would also be able to serve more customers. Community sports will also begin again. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern.
The shift to 100-person maximum means many more gatherings will be able to occur from now on. These changes are good news for business and for those looking to plan larger gatherings. It's another step in renormalising of life as we continue to stamp out the virus. It is the government's view that we should also move as quickly as we safely can to alert level one.
The government will continue to monitor COVID-19 cases and the impact that the removal of disease controls have. A decision on whether to further wind back measures to the lowest, level one, is due in 4 weeks' time. Authorities are, however, warning against complacency. New Zealand's international borders remain closed to foreign nationals, and like neighbouring Australia, New Zealand has used geography and relative isolation to stem the flow of infections coming in from overseas. New Zealand has also announced a new $230 weekly payment to workers who've lost jobs during the pandemic. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
A U.S. biotech company begins the first phase of clinical trials on a vaccine it hopes will work on the coronavirus. AP correspondent Tim McGuire takes things from here.
Novavax, based in Maryland outside Washington, D.C., has begun the safety phase of trials, injecting more than 130 subjects in Australia. The company's top science officer, Dr. Gregory Glenn, has high hopes for the vaccine.
Sincerely believe we have a vaccine that is going to be very good.
Glenn adds, if all clinical trials go well, then the company can quickly ramp up production.
At least 100 million doses by the end of the year, and 1.5 billion doses in the coming year in 2021.
About a dozen vaccine candidates around the world are either in the first phase of testing or about to start testing. I'm Tim McGuire.
The World Health Organization has suspended testing of the malaria drug hydroxychloroquine in COVID-19 patients due to safety concerns. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus made the announcement Monday.
The executive group has implemented a temporary pause of the hydroxychloroquine arm within the Solidarity trial while the safety data is reviewed by the Data Safety Monitoring Board.
Hydroxychloroquine has been touted by U.S. President Donald Trump and others as a possible treatment for the disease caused by the novel coronavirus. The WHO has previously recommended against using hydroxychloroquine to treat or prevent coronavirus infections, except as part of clinical trials. Speaking alongside Dr. Tedros was Mike Ryan, the head of the WHO's emergencies programs.
We cannot make assumptions that just because the disease is on the way down now, that it's going to keep going down, and then we're going to get a number of months to get ready for a second wave. We may get a second peak in this wave.
Ryan said that countries would have to put in place comprehensive strategies to ensure a downward trajectory of cases of COVID-19. Now, as the world grapples with over 5.5 million confirmed cases of novel coronavirus, a new U.S. ban on travelers from Brazil goes into effect Tuesday, 2 days earlier than the White House initially announced, in an effort to stop the spread of COVID-19. Officials did not provide specific reasons for moving up the ban from its planned Thursday start date. It applies to foreigners entering the United States who have been in Brazil at some point during the prior 14 days. Health officials say it can take anywhere between 2 and 14 days before symptoms appear in someone who contracts COVID-19. Brazil has emerged as the new coronavirus hotspot, trailing only the United States in the number of confirmed cases, according to Johns Hopkins University statistics. The White House said that the travel ban will help ensure foreign nationals who have been in Brazil do not become a source of additional infections in the United States. U.S. President Donald Trump has similar travel plans in place on China, Iran, Britain, Ireland, and 26 countries in Europe's Schengen area. Speaking of which, Spain has urged its European Union partners to set up common rules to open borders and reestablish freedom of travel throughout the Schengen area as different national coronavirus lockdowns are phased out. Journalist Nicolas Pinault is in Paris, and I spoke with him via WhatsApp to get the details.
Yeah, so you have this statement made by the foreign minister, Arantxa Gonzalez. She said that on a Spanish radio station. And basically, she's calling her European partners to define, and I'm quote, the common rules that will allow us to retake freedom of movement on Europe, a European territory. So basically, she's asking the EU countries to have the common rules, just like they have in the Schengen area, which is an area of 20 European states where citizens can cross borders without being checked. And basically everything has been stopped because of the pandemic. And right now she's calling basically for the reestablishment of the Schengen area. It's very important for Spain. The country took a heavy hit during the crisis, but this country, Spain, and it could be the same for Italy and France, they rely heavily on tourism.
What about other countries, say like Germany?
Well, you have countries, Germany, basically in Europe, the Germans, basically, they're the ones traveling during the summer, and they seem pretty open to ease the restriction on the travels. You had these statements today from the ministry, the foreign minister, Heiko Maas, who said that Germany wants to end the travel warning for tourist trips for the 31 countries, so the 26 from the Schengen areas, plus Iceland, Liechtenstein, Norway, and Switzerland. And it's pretty big because usually Germany is like one of the main states making the policies. You know, it's one of the leaders within the European Union. So the fact that Germany is saying that today, I think it's pretty significant. And you're going to have meetings in the coming days at Brussels to be able to kind of set up the tone between the EU states to define this reestablishment of the free movement within the Schengen area.
Now, speaking of movement within the Schengen area, Britain is no longer in the European Union. So how does, you know, cross-border travel come into play with, say, people coming over?
Well, that's interesting because right now you have this huge controversy between London and Paris. And even before Brexit, people couldn't take the channel or couldn't take the train from Paris to London without a border check. So the UK always wanted to get their sovereignty over the territory. But that's what is really, really important right now is that you have always this idea of reciprocity between France and the UK. It would be for fishery, it would be for agriculture, and mainly for travel and for tourism. And right now, as of Friday, you have the UK Interior Minister who clearly stated that travelers, even travelers from France, will be subject to self-isolations for 14 days. And obviously, you had this reaction from the French government because they had this idea of they're not going to apply this measure to the French citizens and French travelers. But since the UK made it clear that it would apply to French citizens, France said that it will also apply this self-quarantine for 14 days for UK travelers.
Nicolas Pinault is a reporter living in Paris, France. The United States is slowly reopening, state by state, after weeks of staying at home because of the coronavirus. The pandemic has changed life for most people, especially how and when they receive medical treatment. Some may find their doctors have disappeared. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti has our story today of one doctor working at the epicenter of the coronavirus who's now unemployed.
Dr. Mike Wilson is home in Texas and back to being a dad of seven kids. It is a far cry from the past month when he served as medical director of this New York City field hospital. He first spoke with VOA when he was midway through working 5 weeks straight.
This is day 22, you know, 14-hour days with no day off yet.
When coronavirus numbers dropped in New York, Dr. Wilson returned home to his Texas hospital group and found himself unemployed.
There's a lack of patients to be seen, so they don't need the staff. So nurses and physicians across the country have been laid off, furloughed.
In April, at the height of the pandemic, America's private healthcare industry laid off 1.4 million workers. Here's how that happened. When the pandemic hit, hospitals canceled lucrative elective surgeries to make room for COVID patients. Smaller hospitals, already struggling financially, were pushed to the brink. Additionally, regular emergency room admissions dropped dramatically as Americans feared entering the hospitals that were handling COVID-19 patients. Dr. Ruchita Gandhi treated a female stroke patient who delayed coming to the emergency room until it was too late.
We could see this clot, and it was massive, and just all of us just felt this terrible sense of, this is one of the cases that we really could have made a huge impact on. This woman had, if she had come within 24 hours, we probably could have pulled that clot.
With patients avoiding the ER and revenue down, hospitals cut staff. Some rural hospitals now operate with just one or two doctors in the emergency room.
That's not enough people.
Dr. K.K. Moody founded MDocs, a group of 23,000 emergency physicians. She says her members run the risk of being fired if they complain their facilities are understaffed.
If there is a multi-car pileup just outside the hospital, we need people there. We don't know when the surge is going to happen. We don't know when the emergencies will happen, so we have to be always ready.
Dr. Moody says America's hospitals have always faced financial storms, but now they are struggling in a hurricane.
This is not just an industry. This has become an industry, and it should not be. It should be about one human taking care of another human.
The $2 trillion coronavirus relief bill passed in March provided $100 billion for hospitals to recoup lost revenue.
Oh, thank you very much.
But that hasn't helped Dr. Wilson, who is polishing his resume. The first time he's done that in years. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
And coming up later.
It is definitely not the space shuttle in many ways. It's much smaller, but it's a capsule. It's state of the art from a technology standpoint.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
It's well known that bees venture out to collect pollen from flowers and tree blossoms to provide food for members of their expansive colonies. But what happens when bumblebees have difficulty finding flowers or blooms on their target plants? A new Swiss-led study published in the journal Science suggests that when bumblebees find flowerless plants, they start to destructively munch on its leaves. According to the study, the way that the bumblebee nibbles on the leaves can cause their target plant or tree to bloom 2 weeks to a month earlier than usual. The relationship between flowering plants and bees are mutually beneficial. The bees need the pollen for food, and the plants need the bee pollinators in order to reproduce. It's no accident that plants bloom around the same time bees emerge from their winter hibernation. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Chief Executive Carrie Lam tried to reassure people that China's new security law will not hurt Hong Kong's rights and freedoms as the city prepares for more protests Wednesday. Reuters' Carolyn Malone has more.
After Sunday's protests, Hong Kong is bracing for midweek action over Beijing's proposed national security law. On Tuesday, Chief Executive Carrie Lam tried to reassure people in her first comments since the weekend's unrest, saying the new legislation will not affect the city's rights and freedoms.
Hong Kong's freedoms will be preserved, and Hong Kong's vibrancy and core values in terms of the rule of law, the independence of the judiciary, the various rights and freedoms enjoyed by people will continue to be there.
Hours earlier, Chinese state TV broadcast rare comments from the commander of Beijing's military garrison in Hong Kong. He said officers and soldiers are ready and able to safeguard China's national security and stability. On Monday, China's Foreign Affairs Ministry Commissioner in Hong Kong, Xie Feng, said some protest acts from last year were terrorist in nature.
Hong Kong independent separatists cannot be left unchecked, and the extremists cannot have a free pass to commit violent terrorist acts.
Nearly 200 people were arrested Sunday, accused of illegal assembly, misconduct and violence. Officials say the new law on secession, subversion, foreign interference and terrorism will only affect a small number of residents.
That was Reuters reporter Carolyn Malone. A United Nations investigation into a recent exchange of gunfire between the two Koreas says both countries violated an armistice that ended the 1950 to 1953 Korean War. The American-led UN command, which oversees the armistice, said its investigation found that North Korea breached the armistice by firing four rounds, and South Korea did so by returning fire. It says the terms of the armistice agreement are in place to minimize the risk of incidents such as gunfire exchanges. The incident didn't cause any known casualties on either side. Gunfire exchanges between the Koreas are not unusual. Pakistan announced that Airbus experts have opened a probe into last week's plane crash that killed 97 people when an Airbus A320 went down in a crowded neighborhood near the airport in the port city of Karachi. Initial reports have said that Pakistan International Airlines jet crashed after an apparent engine failure. Pakistani aviation authorities said they have shared their initial findings with the visiting 11-member team from the European plane maker. Only two people on board survived the crash. Stanley Ho, the man credited with transforming Macau from what was then a sleepy Portuguese colony into one of the world's biggest gambling centers, has died at the age of 98. His daughter Pansy said Ho died Tuesday at a hospital in his native Hong Kong. The son of an influential Hong Kong family who lost their fortune in the Great Depression of the 1930s, Stanley Ho escaped to Macau during World War II when Japanese forces captured Hong Kong. He built his fortune smuggling goods from Macau to China, turning that into a successful trading company. China now governs Macau. The Philippines' biggest broadcaster, ABS-CBN, attempted once more to obtain an operating license Tuesday during the first day of legislative hearings on the matter. Stanley Gahete is a reporter in Quezon City, and I spoke with him via Skype to get the details.
Yeah, Steve, about a week after it dropped a proposed five-month provisional license, the House Franchise Committee on Tuesday afternoon started deliberation on bills for ABS-CBN's 25-year franchise. No hot debate was made during the first joint panel hearing committee. ABS-CBN made an opening salvo about the company's responsibility to the country in delivering news information, entertainment, and public service, most especially in times of crisis. ABS-CBN also explained on how important ABS-CBN to every household, especially now where most of the Filipinos are staying at home, needing information and awareness and protections against the COVID-19 virus. President and CEO Carlo Katigbak said that ABS-CBN is his family. Also, Katigbak said that they are not begging, but they are pleading to please return ABS-CBN on air and get back its operation in order to protect the employees, families, and the whole Filipino people. ABS-CBN also said it has 70 million viewers every week and that they are relying to the said TV channel as most are staying at home during COVID-19 lockdown. Even overseas Filipino workers were also emphasized that they are relying to ABS-CBN through TFC or the Filipino channel. On the other hand, Representative Rodanto Marcoleta said that ABS-CBN should not continue its operation anymore because of multiple reasons. Number one, ABS-CBN has been airing for more than 60 years, while Philippine franchise should only have a 50-year limit.
What was the rationale? Because this would prohibit any company from having a long-lasting, you know, opportunity to broadcast in the Philippines. You would have no continuity generation to generation.
Yeah, you're right, Steve. Actually, many were wondering why that representative said during the joint hearing committee, because the in Philippine law, there's only 25-year franchise. That's the length of for example, a franchise given to any TV network. And every 25 years, it's being renewed based on different legislations and different decisions of the Congress and the President if it will be approved. So it's very surprising to say that after 50 years you should be shut down just because it's beyond the 50-year length. While the ABS-CBN's main competitor, the GMA7, is now on its 70th year, and their franchise was granted 2017.
Stanley, ABS-CBN shares are continuing to fall. They have an enormous revenue shortfall because they aren't able to sell ads on TV because they have no franchise license to broadcast. How long are they thinking that they can continue some form of operations beyond the August deadline that they've kind of set right now?
Actually, it depends on the strategies of the executive committee of ABS-CBN. ABS-CBN has digital. They pioneered the OTT over-the-top, wherein you can download through mobile app. But as they said, it cannot compensate or equate to what the broadcast is earning.
Stanley Gahete reports from Quezon City in the Philippines. Billionaire entrepreneur Elon Musk's space company, SpaceX, will send two NASA astronauts to the International Space Station aboard its Falcon 9 rocket from Florida tomorrow, that's May 27th, marking the company's first mission carrying humans. NASA astronauts Bob Behnken, who's 48, and Doug Hurley, who's 52, will ride SpaceX's Crew Dragon capsule to the space station. Now, they spoke to reporters last week, and astronaut Doug Hurley called the capsule an amazing vehicle and discussed the challenges of training for a mission during the pandemic.
It is definitely not the space shuttle in many ways. It's much smaller, but it's a capsule. It's state-of-the-art from a technology standpoint, and we had to come up with a lot of unique ways to continue the training without too big of a speed bump. There have been so many things over the course of the last several years that have amazed me, but that certainly is high on the list, because just for the absolute complete shift that people had to do and the way they just did anything in their normal lives completely changed, and to continue training not only on Dragon but getting our training on Space Station before we left was also important, and the teams just really came together and pulled it off. So it'll be something that we'll have to talk about in a lot more detail after the flight, just how people just really stepped up. It was really a neat thing to see.
Now, astronaut Bob Behnken added that the pair were excited to be part of this mission.
This is an awesome time to be an astronaut with a new spacecraft, to get a chance to go and fly. As graduates of military test pilot schools, if you gave us one thing that we could have put on our list of dream jobs that we would have gotten to have someday, it would have been to be aboard a new spacecraft, be conducting a test mission aboard that spacecraft, and Doug and I get that chance to do it. So we're thankful for that opportunity.
Now, the two astronauts will arrive at the International Space Station a day after they launch from Florida. The mission is SpaceX's first carrying humans and marks the company's climactic test before NASA can certify its Crew Dragon capsule for regular operational flights. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.